walk on straight through the roof, straight through the hole in the ceiling. Take your place in the sky. Oh, look around at the clouds that hold you, that hold you. Burns around you, they encircle you and make a tornado from the air. Oh, it feels just like he dreamed, just like he dreamed. Oh, your shoulders are clear. They have given up the weights and the knots, the weights and the knots, the weights and the knots. No more gravity around you, no more gravity, no more gravity.
Zako Dance Theater, and they have a wonderful, they're actually bringing back a wonderful piece called Sailing Away, and it's looking at San Francisco in 1858 when 800 African Americans sailed away to Victoria, British Columbia. And I thought this song by McLeet Hadaro from her CD On a Day Like This called Walk Up will be the perfect piece to introduce this wonderful conversation that we had this afternoon. So I'm going to play the rest of this On a Day Like This selection, Walk Up, and then we'll start the conversation. So stay tuned. Thank you. walk up from Ikli Hadaros on a day like this. It is sometimes referred to as the San Francisco Exodus of 1858, a little-known part of the city's history in which hundreds of African Americans fled discrimination and the threat of slavery for the safety of a Canadian exile. Choreographer Joanne Haygood and her Zocco Dance Theater are making the iconic event, are marking the iconic event with free public performances of her powerful work, Sailing Away. Performances will be given in three continuous cycles, September 13th, 14th, 15th, and 16th at 12 noon, 1:30 p.m., and 3 p.m. daily, starting at Market Street in Powell. Tuesday, school assembly. Tuesday, there's going to be a school assembly, which is tomorrow, September 11th at 10:30 a.m., and everyone is invited from the community, so you don't have to be in public school to attend. And the artists from Sailing Away will perform excerpts, joined by a live discussion and a performance from Dr. Shusio Bibbs, a one-woman performance portraying 19th century civil rights activist Mary Ellen Pleasant. Panel discussion will also be opening day evening. Does that make sense? I'm talking about Thursday, September 13th at 5 o'clock. There is going to be a panel discussion at the California Historical Society, which is located at 678 Mission Street at 3rd in San Francisco. And then at 6 o'clock after the panel, there's going to be a reception, a little party. Let me tell you a little bit about Zocco Dance Theater before I play the interview with the co-founder and artistic director. Zocco Dance Theater creates and presents performance work that investigates dance as it relates to place. Artistic director Joanna Haygood's creative work focuses on making dances that use natural, architectural, and cultural environments as points of departure for movement, exploration, and narrative. Haygood's innovative work involves in-depth research into the history and character of sites, often involving local communities in the creative process, and typically integrates aerial flight and suspension as ways of expanding performers' spatial and dynamic range. In addition, Zocco provides performances in San Francisco, nationally and internationally, as well as an arts education program for the local community. Zocco Dance Theater's home is San Francisco's Bayview Hunters Point, where Zocco manages a large studio that is utilized for rehearsal, performances, and educational activities for youth and adults. Zocco is the only nonprofit dance company in the Bayview Hunters Point District of San Francisco. And for over 19 years, Zocco's arts education program has served 100 to 150 children annually by offering free in-school and after-school classes and performance opportunities for students 7 to 17 years old. Isn't that fabulous? So, without further ado, I am going to play this wonderful interview with Joanna Haygood, which we just taped. And I know she wasn't expecting me to play it the same day that I taped it, but I'm like, oh, my goodness. I've got to let folks know so they can go over to Baby Hunter's Point tomorrow and at the Opera House at 10:30 if they're in the city or are not teaching or working at that time, take their kids or just take themselves and see an excerpt and see a preview of what's in store for folks on the 13th, 14th, 15th, and 16th. So it's going to really be fun. So that is why we're having this special broadcast. So without further ado, here's Joanna Haygood talking about her work, Sailing Away. I'm so happy that you are bringing Sailing Away back to San Francisco because I missed it.
Oh, I'm really happy that you're going to see it because, you know, I really value your input, your feedback, your eye. So I'm really excited that you're going to be able to experience it this time.
Oh, well, thank you so much. So tell my audience about the story of, you know, these, you know, prominent, you know, African American citizens who decide to leave San Francisco.
Well, the story takes place in the mid-19th century, in the 1950s, when San Francisco was really just developing. It was just birthing. It was, you know, the gold rush had just started, and people were arriving, you know, by the thousands to the city. And, you know, there was an enormous growth in population over just a few years. I mean, it went from like 500 to 35,000 in a few years. So because of that, you know, there was lots of chaos and, you know, a lot of unruly and unlawful behavior, and you know, the Barbary Coast story is, I think, well known by many people. But it was, you know, the Wild West. And among all of these people who were coming, there were, you know, large, you know, by the standard of the day, numbers of African Americans considering moving to the West, you know, with the promise of a better life. And California has an interesting history in that it was brought into the Union as part of the Compromise of 1850, which was basically a compromise around the Fugitive Slave Act. So, in as a kind of an exchange between the kind of abolitionist states and the activists and the slaveholding states and the slaveholders, you know, in government, they traded this union for the passing of this law. And so there's this kind of a, in that there's this kind of tricky paradox about, you know, what later happened. You know, so California is admitted, and people are feeling like it had been a kind of a big prize for the abolitionists. But as African Americans started migrating, there was a fear among those here in California that there would be competition for, you know, for the riches that were going to be gained through this gold rush. So there was, you know, a Fugitive Slave Act that was passed here in California in 1852, and there were different laws that started popping up. You know, the governor tried to pass an exclusion law that would ban African Americans from migrating to California. And even though that didn't pass, there were a lot of laws that then started to spring up that would basically kind of squash any type of civil rights that African Americans would then have here. Mm-hmm. And so it was kind of this interesting paradox between, right, we're going to, you know, create this free state, and yet, and people arrived here, you know, thinking that this would be true, and yet it ended up being, you know, similar to, you know, what people had left, or it was definitely far from the promise that they had actually expected. So, so this group, in this first wave, there were people who arrived, you know, people who had worked in the abolition movement, people who were scholars, who were free, some who were slaves that had bought their freedom. They were very educated people, mm-hmm. Incredible leaders and spokesmen and women, entrepreneurs, and they, you know, arrived trying to make their way, you know, through this, you know, the new land and the legislature that had been developed during that time. And I guess at some point, you know, we all give in. We all buckle to the pressures of and the stresses of this, you know, level of discrimination. And I think the tipping point was when the legislature had passed the testimony, the right of testimony, which basically banned African Americans from testifying in court.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a, you know, an onslaught of varying crimes, you know, anywhere from robbery to, you know, beatings to murder. where African Americans wouldn't have any recourse for justice. So at that point, there had been a number of meetings. There had been conventions that had been held in Sacramento and also in San Francisco, where African Americans came together and discussed the, you know, all the various implications of the numerous laws at that point that had been passed and that were being introduced. And at some point, a group decided that they were going to start looking for a new place. Now, simultaneously, there was also a new gold rush that was happening up in Victoria along the Fraser River. And that seemed to, you know, offer an opportunity to try something different, that there's going to be, you know, another wave of immigrants moving. There'd be needs for services and so on, and the possibility of working and basically settling in a new community where there would be less stress around, you know, the issues that I mentioned. And so they had gotten an invitation from the governor, who was actually mixed race, and he was very excited about the idea. And so over the course of the year, you know, and this is, I'm now into 1858, hundreds of African Americans sailed up to Victoria and settled there. And, you know, that is right now, I mean, there's still an African American community there that can be traced back to this migration. Some of the characters in this particular piece, you know, returned back to the United States after, excuse me, after the Civil War, but many people remained there. So this piece is really about bringing this history to life, primarily because it's an extraordinary story, but also because many of these people have, and their histories have disappeared from our memories here in this area. And, you know, sometimes I will, people will ask me about the piece and I will mention a few names, you know, Mifflin Gibbs being one of them, or even Mary Ellen Pleasant, who I think enjoys, you know, some notoriety, you know, and some notice with local people. But many people don't know who she is, and doesn't, you know, they won't recognize any of the names of these characters. And so I think, you know, that their story is very, very important. And they also speak to what's happening now in California and in San Francisco specifically, around out-migration of African Americans. And I thought, you know, that I had read an article, I guess when I first started working on this piece a couple of years ago, or when we first presented it, I had read an article about the number of African Americans who were leaving San Francisco, and I discovered this history kind of simultaneously, and I thought, how interesting, what an interesting parallel, in that people are leaving for somewhat similar reasons, you know, the, you know, lack of education, kind of the, you know, the lack of, you know, the lack of opportunity, the kind of the, all the consequences of you know, all the discriminatory kind of social practices that have gone on for many, many years, you know, I don't know if I should say education, but, you know, housing, crime, violence. And so I just thought that was really interesting, and that those two conversations, I think, are really important to have. And I think that this particular history is a great place to start. And all of the things that also it implies, just in terms of being African American in this country. I mean, you know, we're always struggling for a place. You know, we're like constantly on the move. You know, we've migrated from the south up to the north, and then north to the west, and we're, you know, there's this lack of of kind of groundedness that I feel that we have, that we're constantly being uprooted, you know, in search of this place that's going to be better for us. And so anyway, so that's kind of in the long-winded response. kind of moving around in circles here, but that's kind of what the piece is about. And I'm really happy this time that I have an opportunity to engage some scholars in this area, people, historians who have really, really, really researched this history in a much deeper way than I have. We've spent, you know, many years with a you know, primary focus of kind of unearthing some of this history, as well as some people who have been working on these studies about the out-migration of African Americans over the last 20 and 30 years here in San Francisco. So they're going to be part of a panel that will be hosted by MOAD, the Museum of the African Diaspora, and the California Historical Society on our first day. So I'm really excited about that, and I'm very excited about learning more myself, because I don't feel like, you know, I have completely captured everything. I mean, it's what's interesting about doing a piece like this is, and doing any kind of historical piece, is that every year there's new information.
Certainly.
There's new things that get discovered, and new information that actually, you know, discredits the information that you've just spent your, you know, last 3 years studying, and you know, it's all very, very interesting. So, well, go ahead. You can ask a question, because
Well, I just wanted to you know, let our audience know that Sailing Away is three continuous cycles, performances given in three continuous cycles, began on September 13th, 14th, 15th, and 16th, 12 noon, 1:30 p.m., and 3 p.m. daily, starting at Market and Powell. That's, you know, right where the cable car is.
Yeah,
and all the stores.
It's a spot.
Right, definitely. And you know, people can just follow the dancers down Market as they sail away, and the discussion that's going to be hosted by MOAD, it's really exciting. The panel discussion is taking place at the California Historical Society, and that's 678 Mission Street at 3rd, and Thursday, September 13th at 5, and then there's going to be a reception after that. And I'm wondering, with regards to the performance from Dr. Shushil Bibbs, portraying the 19th century civil rights activist Mary Ellen Pleasant, is that for the school assembly, or is that for a part of the panel discussion,
too? It's for the school assembly.
Yeah, that's going to really be great, because you all are located in Bayview Hunters Point.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm very excited, and some of the children who will be at the assembly are kids that that we work with during the year.
Nice.
And I am hoping that this subject and this piece will be the focus of this year's work with the young people. But it is actually open. We've invited.
Oh, super.
We've invited people from the community to join us, and that's going to be on.
Yeah. So tomorrow, September 11th.
Yeah. Tomorrow.
Yeah. 10:30 in the morning.
10:30 in the morning.
Yeah. 4705 Third Street. That's the famous historic landmark on the Bayview Opera House. And so that's a school assembly with a performance. And then back to the panel discussion. Let's see. Who are you going to have there? You're going to have yourself.
Sharon Hewitt from Clare. And okay. She sat on the Mayor's Commission for Out-Migration in 2009.
Okay.
So she's going to bring a really interesting perspective. Jan Baptiste Atkins, who's just written and published a book called African Americans in San Francisco, and Dr. Shushil Bibbs, as you mentioned, she's going to be, she has, you know, has spent a number of years interpreting, researching and interpreting Mary Ellen Pleasant. And our moderator is going to be Gregory Hodge, who is a youth activist in our community.
Oh, that's great. So bridging the generations, too.
Yeah, yeah.
That's awesome. That's really excellent.
Yeah,
that's excellent.
Really excited about it.
Yeah. So you yourself, you know, migrated, over 30 years ago from the East Coast to the West Coast. And your dance company, which you co-founded, Zaco Dance Theater, you do performance work that investigates dance as it relates to place. And so all of your work has, you know, a sort of specificity of the ground and the area that it occupies. I mean, that's just as much a part of the piece as the dancers and the story. My favorite by far, it still is, even though I love everything, is when we were at the airport. And people were migrating, like coming in, oh, how did we get here as African people? Yeah, that was so, so beautiful. People in the air, because you also have people flying in your pieces.
Yeah.
Although they're not going to be flying down Market, they're going to be walking.
No, they're going to be flying down Market. That was a little bit out of our budget.
Yeah, so I was wondering if you could talk a bit about, you know, how you translated these stories of these people of African descent. I believe there are like 800 of them. And I remember going to this really wonderful symposium at the African American Art and Culture Complex. And I think Reverend Amos Brown was there.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the 200th anniversary of this migration. And they had a big special thing that the Parks and the National Park Service was facilitating, and there was the Commodore, the steamer, the Commodore, was there. People could actually go to the pier and sort of reenact and re-experience. Yeah, it was the 150th anniversary, right? Commemoration. Yeah, and then here comes, you know, Joanna, like right on time. Like,
and I was really sorry that I missed that event. And you know, when I was speaking earlier about, you know, reading this article about the out-migration, and then I bumped into this other, you know, the articles about that particular event, and that's how that history started to make, you know, come to life for me. And so I was really sorry. I think it was just like, you know, I don't know, it was a matter of moments after it happened. I was like, oh my God,
wow.
I can't believe that I missed that. It's really extraordinary. But I did have an opportunity to, to speak with Guy Washington from the Park Service, and he shared all of his research with me. And
nice.
So I did have, you know, connection with, you know, that event in that way in terms of the research. But I was sorry that I couldn't participate, during that time. But I'll say that the piece itself is, there are, the characters move down Market Street, and they have a series of solos that each of them do. They come together in different parts, and they create a number of tableaus along the way as well. And basically, you know, they're in period dress, and they are carrying different parts of the ship. You know, there's a big anchor, and there's a big ship's wheel. There's a bell, and you know, there are various other props that, you know, kind of work as different metaphors for their trip. And then there's a newsy character who hands out this newspaper along the way. She kind of accompanies the group and, you know, acts as a, you know, basically a newsy. And so there's a program that is in the form of a newspaper, obviously.
Mm.
And inside of the newspaper is a profile of each of the characters and some history behind the piece with historic photographs. And so people can kind of engage in the piece in a couple of ways. They can watch the characters, and of course all the performers are extraordinary. They're very, very strong.
Mm-hmm.
And especially within the context of this kind of, like, the what I call the field of noise, you know, on Market Street. But having them kind of juxtaposed to the goings-on of present day is very striking. And to think that these people, these specific people, were actually engaging in business and engaging with each other on this street, you know, in this area, you know, 150 some odd years ago, is also very striking. It's almost like, you know, their ghosts have come back, and yet they're kind of stronger than kind of, they don't feel ghostly, they feel real.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's, you know, I wanted to make an installation piece, and I wanted it to be embedded in on the street, so it wasn't, it didn't have kind of a beginning. I mean, it does have a beginning and an end,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't exactly feel like that. It feels like it's ongoing, and I've often been interested in kind of this, you know, this notion of time and how we describe it and how we experience it, and you know, trying to see the two, you know, understanding that, you know, what our experiences are now are completely tied to what was then. So in fact, we're still, part of us is still living in the 19th century. You know, part of our ideas and, you know, our progress is based on what's happened. And so I think kind of seeing these two time frames kind of pushing against each other, you know, in this kind of parallel universe here, this parallel reality, is really interesting. And, you know, the characters don't exactly, they don't overtly interact with people on the street.
Mm-hmm.
They interact with each other, but they're very, but, and at the same time, they feel very connected. You don't feel like you can't walk up to them and look at them and be close to them. But, you know, they're not going to talk, they don't speak during this show. So there's a really interesting relationship between the audience and the performers. And of course they're stunning in terms of the way that they look. I mean,
mm-hmm.
they're all very handsome people, and I tried to cast the show so the characters looked, there's something similar in the way that they look or feel to the characters that they're portraying.
Oh.
And they're dressed in really beautiful, you know, 19th century clothing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I wanted to say that, you know, not every African-American that migrated to San Francisco ended up, you know, or was, a, you know, a well-off person. I mean, I think that there's, you know, range in class and opportunities even back then, and probably most were still very poor. But this particular group, these were very accomplished people,
mm-hmm.
And very highly successful in terms of their businesses. So I thought that that was interesting. And actually, Sushil Bibbs is working on a piece about the Higher Sisters, the opera singers. Do you know them? They were born in the 50s. And I forget exactly. They were born somewhere here in California. I think they'd had some relationship to San Francisco, but were international opera stars.
Hmm.
And, you know, for this assembly, you know, I'd been thinking about it and doing some researching, and you know, I had never heard of them
mm-hmm.
either. And their history is really quite extraordinary. And as was their talent. And so while I was thinking about this assembly and adding music, you know, which there isn't any in the show, it's just the sound of the street, I started discovering all these really amazing African-American composers of the time, you know, and people, it's just people who are writing really sophisticated music, really, really profoundly beautiful music, and classical music, and you know, people who I've never heard of, who are just lost, you know, 'cause
mm-hmm.
we're not hearing them on the radio, on the classical stage. You know, so anyway, so it's just like another thing. It's like, wow, you know, there's so much dimension, you know, to our history, and somehow so much of it is lost. You know, now, you know, people have been finally talking about slavery, you know, but basically our history is being kind of defined completely through that lens, you know, and it's much bigger than that. I mean, not to say that's, you know, that's not an important part or whatever, and they're gigantic, and, you know, I've done plenty of pieces around that history, and I think that we are still in recovery from that because it was so powerful, but, you know, there's so much more. You know, it's the same thing as, like, you know, all Africans, you know, were, you know, wild savages, you know, this strange picture that people have created, when it's like, but what about the mathematicians and the princes and the, you know, and the agriculturalists and the, you know, so it's just kind of the same thing in this country, too. You know, we're missing a lot, and a lot is getting lost. So I'm excited about kind of this new level for myself, in any case, and I want to be a part of, or, you know, be able to contribute whatever I can in helping keep these histories alive.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, your work is always, you know, it's always so timely. I mean, it's entertaining, but it's also thought-provoking. One can't ignore the lesson. And I was just thinking when I was looking at your website, Zacho.org, Z-A-C-C-H-O.org, and looking at some of the past works, and you don't have them all there, but you have the more recent ones. When you did The Monkey and the Devil, and we had a great conversation around that, you and I, and the installation artist. Could you call his name for me? Because I don't
know. Charles Chaplin.
Yeah, Charles Chaplin. And that was just so interesting when you all were talking about sort of, you know, sort of the conversation that you had about race and how your lives sort of intertwined. That was really interesting. But that was in 2008, and that was the same year, you know, 150th anniversary of this migration. And I think it's just really wonderful that these 800 black folks were doing well.
Yeah.
You know, and they had the choice. Like, we can charter, you know, a steam liner.
Mm-hmm.
And go leave here. I mean, you know, if it's not going to be pleasant for us, we don't have to just stay and take it.
Yeah.
So a lot of times people want to leave, but they don't have the resource. And these folks, they just, well, you know, and they were like, you know, sort of, they were anchors in the community. So when they left, their absence was felt.
Yeah.
And when they arrived in Victoria, their presence, you know, was, you know, sort of cultivated and made that place a lot richer.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so that's the, you know, we don't hear stories like that often. Like,
no,
you know, we're always like, oh, down and out and poor.
Yeah. No, it's true. That's what I'm saying. It's like, you know, there's so much dimension, you know. We have we've been forced to create this very flat picture, you know. And so let's change that.
Yeah, certainly. So why this week? You know, this, like, 9/11, like, oh, okay, that's
well, you know,
and then you know, presidential conventions just ended, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is an election year, and black folks, they're not sailing away because they want to sail away in San Francisco or other places to these hinterlands like Antioch and Bay Point and other states even sometimes.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if there was, I mean, I'm not sure that there was a significance of the time, the week, in that it just seemed to be like, let's do it. It's September. We're here.
Okay.
And at the same time, you know, I think that it, you know, how things do coincides with a lot of really important conversations that are happening, you know, around the election and around the who has and who hasn't. And I think this issue of out-migration here in San Francisco is an ongoing conversation, and that it's, you know, people have been, you know, trying to figure out how to to stop it, you know, for a number of years. And that was kind of the point of Gavin Newsom's commission, you know, to figure out how do we keep African Americans in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I don't think that there's been any real headway or success at this point. I mean, but I think that this is something that people are actively trying to figure out. Like, you know, what are we doing? What are we doing wrong? Well, of course, you know, we could name, probably you and I could probably name 100 things right now. But you know, how to solve this dilemma, I think is going to take a lot of aggressive work and in a lot of different areas. So I think what tends to happen is that, you know, commissions get created and people come up with recommendations, and then, you know, a new mayor comes in or whatever happens, they just get tabled.
Mm-hmm.
And people change their mind about where they need to put priorities, and, you know, we don't really change. So, but I'm hoping, you know, I mean, I'm hoping that this conversation that happens at the Historical Society can inspire others to have more conversations, and that some actions can actually be born out of them. So, mm-hmm. And, you know, one thing leads to the next. I mean, first you got to bring it up.
Right.
And you have to get people in the room to talk
mm-hmm.
about it.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, because one thinks when, you know, we contemplate, you know, the migration of 1858 to Victoria and, you know, your piece Sailing Away based on that, those stories, the end of enslavement, and you know, the white folks saying, okay, what do we do with these black people? Let's
mm-hmm.
send them back to Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was this, you know, this out migration to Liberia.
Mm-hmm.
And what the baggage that African Americans took with them to
yeah.
Africa, and all the trouble that caused, you know, all the turmoil and unsettled kind of relationships that developed between those that were born in America and went
mm-hmm.
to Africa, and those that were indigenous African, you know, 150 years later,
mm-hmm.
You know, and all the war and
yeah.
And how, you know, it. I mean, it's really wonderful, you know, that Lama Bowie and the women that prayed peace into their country, and, you know, the president, Shirleaf, you know, is there as the first woman president on the continent of Africa, and there are not that many women presidents in the world, so, you know.
For that matter.
Exactly. So it's like, whoa, man, it's like in the connections there. So when I think about the shrinking populations of black people in these urban centers, one wonders, if we leave, will you miss us?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and do you value our presence, those that are, few of us that are left, or would you just like us to just disappear or just vanish?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. What do you think about that?
Well, you know, I think that we will be missed. I mean, you know, we bring, you know, a richness in culture. I mean, I think in any community, a very unique and important perspective of what this country actually is. I think, you know, I think it would be impossible not to be missed. I mean, it's like, even though that may not be recognized at the onset. And I think that, you know, a lot of people in San Francisco don't see how segregated the city is. You know, people who live in, you know, Knob Hill or, you know, wherever they live on the, you know, downtown, or, I mean, you know, they don't get a sense, or they don't recognize, they don't see, they're somehow blinded to the fact
mm-hmm.
that San Francisco is very segregated. And people don't know that there's actually an out-migration going on. I mean, they're very, very removed. I mean, I think San Franciscans like to think they live in an equitable, highly diverse community or, you know, city.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, you know, it's basically being taken over by the upper middle to upper classes. And it is, you know, moving the poor, you know, poor and particularly the African Americans out of the city. I mean, if you were to go down to Bayview, you can start to see the shift. Now, there's other places. I mean, I think the Asian American population is growing.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Latino community is strong. And I think that we're probably the ones that are suffering the most, I mean, in terms of the shift. Although I read something recently about where our numbers are kind of leveling out is in the Tenderloin.
Really?
But, yeah.
Uh-huh.
But that we, you know, it is really the really struggling population, you know, the lowest in the income bracket among African Americans.
Hmm. Oh, so we're not doing well.
We're not doing well.
Hmm.
No.
So,
you know, like anything else, it's a complicated story, but
mm-hmm.
I think that there certainly are solutions. And
right. Yeah. Yeah. You probably know about the story of when James Baldwin visited Bayview Hunters Point.
I don't.
Oh, okay.
Tell me, what a fabulous story already.
Yeah, it was, it ended up being, it was KQED that sort of filmed it, his visit to talk to the young people, and it was in 1964, and the film was called Take This Hammer, and you can actually watch it on...
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's in YouTube. You could pull it up. And so James Baldwin, he visited Bayview Hunters Point, and he met with the young people there, and he also met with older people. And we're just talking about how San Francisco was not that far removed from, you know, Birmingham, Alabama,
mm-hmm.
with regards to the treatment of his black folks. And then so what happened was there was a film made by a Swedish journalist, Carolyn Benz, and it was she basically talked to some of the young people who are now older
mm-hmm.
To reflect on that visit and where, you know, they are today. You know, where is San Francisco today? Where is the Bay Area today?
Mm-hmm.
And then she they screened the you know, the Baldwin film when they were, you know, I guess 40 mm-hmm. years younger, and then her film, which is a lot shorter, and it was at the Lucky Store Gallery.
Oh,
yeah.
Is the new film also called Take This Hammer? Or
no, that's the name of the old film. That's called Take This Hammer.
Film.
The new film. I don't know if do they have a name.
uh-huh. I can ask Daryl at the luggage store.
Oh yeah, certainly, yeah. And so that was that in June? I think that was in June. Yeah, it was Juneteenth actually that it was screened, June 19th, and it was really great meeting, you know, these men and women. You know, some were like really up there because they were, you know, mature then, and now I think one of the women, she is like 80, 90 years old now.
Oh, yeah, because that was well over, that was like 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it was really great, and I was just thinking about that and just sort of this wonderful place that, you know, you have, had your theater company is located, you know, in Bayview, and and so, you know, it's just really wonderful that all these great things are happening there.
Oh,
and
yeah, there's so many great things, so many great people, and I would just really be so sad if everybody got off the list. I'm like, wait a second. Everybody's been working so hard to make it better, you know. it's, and but it's the way that it happens, and all kind of redevelopment, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's never made better for the people who have struggled and worked so hard to get it there, you know.
Right.
Always better for the newcomers.
Mm-hmm, unfortunately. Yeah. So I noticed with regards to the dancers, and I definitely want you to give a shout out to your scenic designer and your writer and your costume designer, because you're talking about the gorgeous, you know, outfits that the dancers are wearing. But you've got some dancers that I know that have been dancing with you for a while, like Robert Henry Johnson and
Amara, Edward Smith,
mm-hmm, Shakiri.
Shakiri is back. It was funny because I saw Shakiri and Amara dancing together.
Oh.
You know, they're dancing together in the show, and they were out there rehearsing. And I remember the first time I saw them dance together was in 1980. I think 2 or 3.
Wow.
Yeah, and I just kind of flashed back to that time, and Amara was really young, and we were all really young. and it was just one of these moments going, oh, my God, I've been in the room with you guys for a long time. I mean, they weren't dancing with me. They were dancing with Ed Mock back then.
Oh, okay.
You know, who was that extraordinary artist and mentor to them, and they were in his company for a long time. So they're in the show, and Antoine Hunter is in it, and
Raisa Simpson.
Yes, and Beeb Chanel, and
he just had this great show at Afro Solo that was just phenomenal.
Yes,
oh my God!
Yeah, that was a really great show.
Mm-hmm. It was really lovely.
Who else do we have? Is Matthew Wickett and then a new gal who's just exquisite, Jetta Martin.
Jetta's awesome. She had a show at Dance Mission, which is really great. And then Travis Santel Rowland.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know him, do I?
Oh, he's wonderful. He's got a fantastic range. He's been working with actors. He's been working with lots of choreographers, Michael Gomez. And
oh, okay. Oh, I do know him then. Yes.
He's amazing because he was like a state champion wrestler.
Oh, he's the big guy, right?
He's the big guy. We all want to be his partner because you could just like throw yourself at him and he just can, you know, twirl and go. And, you know, you feel so secure. He's so strong and his body is so smart.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a wonderful, wonderful person. Just like all of them are just really, they're not just extraordinary artists. They're really extraordinary people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
yeah.
And they're doing, their work is you know, it's just got a really great message. It's filled with important discussion and it's really great.
Yeah.
And then I'm working, we worked with Kim Ewell as dramaturg. Yeah, she hasn't been with us on this round, but she was the original dramaturg, and she's a wonderful playwright and dramaturg. She lives in Iowa right now.
Oh, wow, okay.
And Callie Floor, who works at ACT in their costume shop, she's our costume magician.
Okay.
Turned us all into these really, I'm just walking around trying to make sure everybody gets where they're supposed to be, but the rest of them are really stunning. I'm the harried one along the edges. And then Wayne Campbell has managed to make these really, really beautiful, they're not set pieces, they're really prop pieces, but they're big, they're very poetic, and so that they're really fantastic, and they bring another, you know, yet another layer to the work.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a couple of great paintings in the work.
Oh, really?
One of the characters, the character that Robert plays is a painter, and so we see kind of the way San Francisco looked particularly on the waterfront through his perspective of his paintings, and his name is Grafton Tyler Brown. So I have a couple of very dear friends who are brilliant painters, so they have researched his style and his colors.
Hmm.
And have created paintings that kind of reflect all of that.
Oh,
that
nice.
Are used in the show.
Oh, that's great. So these people that the characters that these dancers represent, since this is your second time doing the piece, Is there communication between you and Victoria?
No, not this. We're not yet.
Okay.
That is the next, definitely the next step.
Mm-hmm.
And Jan Baptiste Adkins, who I mentioned was going to be here, she's going to be at the panel.
Yes.
She has made that connection, so that's another
super.
Reason why I'm excited about hearing her speak and
mm-hmm.
getting her perspective of what happened afterwards and, you know, what that community is today there.
Oh, nice.
She's kind of the link
mm-hmm.
to that next.
Is she a descendant of the,
no,
the immigrants?
No, she's a local historian.
Okay. Oh wow, it's gonna really be great when
yeah,
when it comes back together.
Yeah.
And those that sailed away know that we remember them.
Yeah.
And you do the work for them.
Yeah.
That would
be
really super.
To try to bring this piece now, you know,
mm-hmm.
make the next.
Yeah, I want to go and see you do it there.
Okay, let's do it.
Yeah, that's going to really be cool. So people want to see Sailing Away September 13th, 14th, 15th, and or 16th at the various times. Do you have to move with it? Is that how it works?
Yeah, you move with it. It starts at Powell Street,
mm-hmm.
And then the characters kind of break off,
mm-hmm.
and there are, I think there are seven blocks. I should know that, but I can't remember.
Uh-huh.
But they break off and they follow a straight line, you know, down to Battery and First, which is where the old shoreline used to be.
Okay. And so,
if you miss mm-hmm. if you get there at, you know, 1:15,
mm-hmm.
You know, and there's nobody there on Powell Street, then you can just continue to walk straight down the block, and you'll run into someone.
Sure. Are you the person that's the newsy person? Are you giving out the
No, Shakiri's the newsy.
Oh, she's the newsy.
Yeah.
Oh, that's going to be quite dramatic.
Yeah.
Okay.
It is.
Oh, that's going to be so fun. Wow, I wish I wasn't teaching at that time tomorrow for the school assembly, so I have to catch you all on market. And also,
we'll do that again. We haven't really done school assemblies for a long time, and
mm-hmm.
so this is kind of a first step to that
mm-hmm.
again. And I am actually looking forward to seeing how it goes. I mean, it's a great story,
mm-hmm.
and I'm trying some, you know, some different things.
Oh, yeah, it's going to really be wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, I look forward to seeing you on Thursday, and I'm definitely going to try to catch the migration a few times.
Oh,
no, the panel for sure. But no, I want to see it more than once, because Robert told me about it. What year? When did you do this? 2 years ago?
Yeah, 2010.
Yeah. And he said, oh, and he told me, I'm in this blah, 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 because I saw him with the suitcase. Oh, yeah, I was just in. Oh, you didn't know about it? And but it wasn't over. I just never got a chance to go and catch it.
Yeah.
So anyway, here's my opportunity.
Very busy. That's why I wanted to put it in the middle of Market Street too. It's like, well, if we're gonna find anybody, there'd be, you know, there's so many people here.
Oh yeah, yeah.
If we want to tell this story, we can just, you know, go mm-hmm. straight to the heart of things.
Oh yeah, yeah, and people are. I mean, just so many great things happen on Market, and people
mm-hmm.
are gonna be so like.
Yeah, and you know what's funny about it is that, you know, sometimes the characters will go by and it'll be just, you know, like people going down Market Street going, oh, we're in San Francisco, anything. Oh, there's some 19th century person. Yeah, so, okay, they're dancing. Okay. You know, it's not exactly remarkable given the fact that, you know, that San Francisco has this kind of unique profile of, you
mm-hmm.
know, anything goes. You know, all sorts of crazy activities going on at all times.
Mm-hmm. Right, so. Yeah. Yeah, maybe I can get one of my classes so we could just skip class and just catch the ride over. That would be really fun.
Yeah, it wouldn't be like skipping class. It would be enhancing class.
True. Yeah. I'll have to let them tell them about that tomorrow.
Yeah.
We can plan this. Yeah, that would be really super. All right. Well, thank you so much, Joanna, for the wonderful conversation.
Thank you for speaking to you. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Sure. Have fun with the children tomorrow and
thank
the
you.
Members of the community that are able to participate.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. You take good care.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
So we were speaking to Joanna Haygood, co-founder of Zocco Dance Theater, about Sailing Away. And again, on Tuesday, September 11th, at 10:30 at the Bayview Opera House, there is going to be a pre-performance conversation and performance, and with a special performance by Dr. Sushil Bibbs in her one-woman performance portraying 19th century civil rights activist Mary Ellen Pleasant. And I want to read you a little bit of some of the press release about Sailing Away, which we didn't talk about. Joanna writes in her narrative about the piece that Market Street will provide the backdrop as performers interpret historical narratives through a series of vignettes and activities incorporating sites and monuments located between Powell and Battery Streets. Important city monuments in the piece include Mechanics Monument and a Mission Day Monument. It's ironic that a city now celebrated for its diversity once saw hundreds of its citizens flee in fear for their lives, she writes. In the mid-19th century, San Francisco's main thoroughfare, Market Street, was home to a bulging black middle class. However, Governor Peter Hardiman Burnett, California's first governor, 1849-51, pushed for the exclusion of free Negroes from the entire state. Although a black exclusion bill never passed in California, it reflected strong public opinion within the state, which eventually led to the passage of other discriminatory bills against blacks as well as Chinese, Mexicans, and Native Americans. These bills restricted education, homesteading, voting, intermarriage, and the right of testimony, which barred blacks from testifying against whites on their own behalf in court. Joanna spoke about that. And then that's why in 1858 it just got to be a bit too much, and that's when the 800 African Americans sailed for British Columbia aboard the steamer Commodore to escape growing hostility. So it was really exciting in 2008 to actually board the Commodore, this ship that made this historic journey with these African Americans on this exodus. So she writes that while some people may know the names of people such as early entrepreneur Mary Ellen Pleasant, also known as Mammy Pleasant, or Mifflin Wistar Gibbs, a participant in the Underground Railroad and friend of Frederick Douglass, they may not have heard of figures like Grafton Tyler Brown, Archie Lee, or Peter Lester. So, Sailing Away features eight such prominent African Americans who lived and worked near Market Street during the mid-19th century and evokes their participation in the 1858 exodus. Joanna says, while creating this work, it was important to acknowledge the invisibility and loss of African American history and the current out-migration. And she says, since 1858, there have been two notable waves of black out-migrations. The first occurred during the redevelopment of the Fillmore District in the 1950s and 60s. The second is currently underway. And she says, the African-American population in San Francisco has declined by 40.8% since 1990. And some stated causes of this new out-migration are the lack of adequate housing, discouraging achievement gaps in education, and the disproportionate incidence of violence in the changing, deintegrating neighborhoods. The study implies that African Americans live in an environment that habitually dismisses palatable challenges to full participation in the health and commerce of San Francisco. So, yeah, the discussions have been pretty lively at the California Historic Society at 678 Mission Street at 3rd in San Francisco on Thursday, September 13th at 5 p.m. after the performance and after the last of the three performances down Market Street. And there's going to be a reception at 6, and the discussions and the reception are free. So I'm going to close this wonderful special show with another McLeod Hadaro, And we're going to close with one of my favorites from that CD, From a Day Like Today, called Call.
Heavy, sweet orange, made the branch bow low, 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 low. Well, once a Maya, a thumb on high. When it is ready for hungry hands, it can spawn you. Little fair, its halo grows and power swells. You are to do by its call. Oh, yeah, it's called. Oh. Like the orange, well, she was dressed in, well, she dressed in color. When the sparrow, I was a lover, she sang a note, sing her note, sing her note, into the ether. She kissed upon you a little bell, a halo rose. How it swells, you are asked to do fire calls. Oh, yeah, calls. Now the time. Night alone. Well, it have gone no more. Staring at the stars no more, no more, no more. Now the time for building has come, and love will build itself a house as tall as the sky. It will sway in the wind, but it will not fall.